Welcome. Thank you so much for joining us. This is Ellen Kamai, the Natural Nurse, and we're here with you today on the Natural Nurse and Dr. Z right here on Progressive Radio Network. So happy to be with you today and every day, because truthfully, you can listen to this show 24/7. Very interesting thing happened this morning. I was walking because I walk early in the morning. I love to exercise. I'm so happy I love to exercise, by the way. It's actually great to exercise because it becomes an addiction to where, you know, you just don't feel okay unless you get your exercise fix. So that's good. You promote a healthy addiction. But in any event, I was walking along here in my home in Florida, and what happened was that a person actually came up to me and said, "Oh, I listen to you all the time on Progressive Radio Network." Now, this person was actually riding a bicycle and having, I guess, a nice ride and having something in her ears. I'm not real sure on what she had in her ears, but I think it was something they call earbuds. You guys must know what I mean, even though I don't know what I mean, but some kind of little round things in her ear. And that was really interesting that she was walking along, well, actually riding along her bike. She stopped her bike and said, "Oh my God, you're Ellen Kamai, the Natural Nurse. It's so amazing. I'm riding past you, but I'm listening to you on Progressive Radio Network on the app." Well, guess what? You can download that app. It's just Progressive Radio Network. You can get it at any, they tell me, app store, whatever that might be. I don't know what that is. But perhaps at this app store, you can download the Progressive Radio Network app. And I do know it's for free. That word I understand, free. So isn't that great? You know, it was so coincidental. I'm walking along, and maybe you're listening again right now. Hi, Sandy, how are you doing? So that was really, really fantastic to know the reach that we get from Progressive Radio Network. So please feel free to download the app. And you also can listen to us on a dedicated phone line, which I can get to. You can email me at naturalnurse.com, and I'll tell you the dedicated phone line that you can call to listen if you prefer, you know, that old-fashioned method. Well, we are so happy to have as our guest today Melissa Gallico. And Melissa Gallico is the author of the book we'll be talking about today, The Hidden Cause of Acne. And Melissa has a very interesting bio. She's a former military intelligence officer, Fulbright scholar, and intelligence specialist at the FBI. Wow, what a bio. She has instructed classes for FBI analysts at Quantico and provided intelligence support for FBI national security investigations. She graduated with honors from Georgetown University and holds a master's degree from the University of St. Andrews in Scotland. And she lives right nearby me in South Florida. So how are you doing? Hi, Melissa. How are you this beautiful morning? I'm calling in from Deerfield Beach, Florida.
Oh, I'm doing well, Ellen. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
Well, that is quite a remarkable bio that you have. You are certainly a well-qualified young woman with so many accolades to your name, but I don't see anything there having to do with health and healing, which leads me to the question, why would you write a book about a health issue?
It was really out of necessity that I ended up down this path. As you read, my career path is something completely different. But during that time, I traveled a lot because I was working in national security, and I would live overseas. And I noticed that when I lived in certain countries, I didn't have acne. And then I would return to the U.S., and within a few days, I would start to experience these painful cystic breakouts.
So wait a minute, when you traveled to certain other locations, you did not have any problem?
I'm sorry?
When you traveled to other locations, you did not have a skin problem?
Correct. Yeah. Certain countries, I didn't have acne at all. I couldn't figure it out because sometimes it was like Senegal, Tunisia, Scotland, the Caribbean, all of these places. And I couldn't figure out what they had in common that my acne would clear up. And this went on and on for about 20 years. I had acne off and on, depending on where I was living. And I finally figured out it was because of the fluoride added to the water supply in most cities in the United States.
Well, how did you figure that out? There's a lot of things in the water supply. How would you, bring it down to understanding that this might be related to fluoride toxicity?
Well, as an intelligence analyst, I developed a theory. Initially, I thought it was lead, but just because that was the first thing that came to my mind when I thought about water contamination. But I couldn't find any correlation with that. Then I thought maybe it was copper, but again, maybe copper piping or something, but I couldn't find any evidence to support that theory. And finally, I thought fluoride, and it was very easy to test just by temporarily switching to water that is low in fluoride, and immediately I saw a big difference in my skin. It didn't clear up completely because I was still being exposed to fluoride in a lot of different ways, which I'm sure we'll talk about a little later, but it was such a huge improvement that I knew I was onto something.
Wow, what a story. Now, is there any way that you could test how much fluoride there was, let's say, in your body and also in the water samples that you were interested in?
So it's really hard to account for how much fluoride is accumulated in your body because it does bioaccumulate over time and it stays there for decades. And there aren't really any tests you can do that give you a good idea of that. You can measure fluoride in urine, or they could measure fluoride in different liquids, but it's really not a good indicator of how much fluoride is stored in your bones. So that's a difficult one. But it is much easier to test how much fluoride is in your water supply. And you can even get this information direct from your water supplier. They do testing periodically for fluoride, and they're required to have it in their annual water quality report that they provide to their consumers. So you can contact a water company and just ask them what the most recent test was for fluoride, and they should be able to answer that for you.
And I do think most municipalities, at least where I live, they have a place you can pretty easily access the latest tests as well as tests of other years online.
Yeah, if you Google the name of your town, like Deerfield Beach Water Quality Report, you should be able to find it online pretty easily.
Which is great. Now, however, sometimes it's pretty disturbing because you'll see there's all kinds of things in the water. And what about that very tricky number, which is like no detectable limit, something like that, which really doesn't mean there's none there. It's just less than a particular measurement.
Yeah, so most water does have some amount of naturally occurring fluoride. And if it's under 0.1 part per million, they'll usually write ND for not detected. And this is good. This is what you want to see in your water quality report. If you see something, 0.7 is what they recommend for artificially fluoridated water. That is enough to make my skin break out. And when I lived in cities that had it fluoridated over 1 part per million, that was the worst my skin ever was. So that to me is a high number. It's all relative. Dentists will say, oh, that's not really that much. But for me, that was way too much for me. So you definitely want to see ND or something under 0.1 part per million.
Okay, here's a good question for you, Melissa. What about, because you brought up the word dentist, right? So now people are confused because what they know is their dentist tells them to use fluoride. In fact, they actually paint it on their teeth when they're in their office, and they tell them to use fluoride in their toothpaste, etc. Why is that information being given out?
So mainstream dentists, are fans of fluoride because they believe that it helps prevent cavities. And there are different ways. They think that it works topically, so that's why they use it as a varnish, and that's why it's included as an ingredient in a lot of different toothpaste. But they also add it to the water supply, saying that, when you bathe your teeth in fluoridated water all day, it will make them less susceptible to cavities. So that's the whole reason that it's added to public water supplies.
Okay, so does it decrease cavities?
That is a really good question. A lot of debate over that. Even some dentists who are against public water fluoridation will say, you know, if you use it topically, you know, in the right way, it will reduce cavities. I think perhaps most of your listeners are familiar with the alternative idea that cavities are caused by poor nutrition and eating too much sugar and having a lack of nutrients in the diet. So I think, personally, I think that those are better ways to prevent cavities by cutting down on sugars and by increasing the amount of vitamins and minerals in the overall diet. But again, that there's a lot of debate over the question of whether fluoride does or doesn't protect against cavities. But either way, it is supposed to work topically, so it's not something that we would need to be ingesting in our water supply.
Now let's go a little bit deeper in terms of something I'm sure you're familiar with, that it's not like fluoride is fluoridized fluoride. There are different molecular forms of fluoride, and some might be more something that stimulates acne, let's say, or have other toxic effects more than other forms, because in almost every vegetable there is some fluoride.
Exactly. So when fluoride is found in nature, usually it's combined with calcium or magnesium or some other mineral that it bonds to, and these are really strong bonds. The fluoride added to the water supply artificially is fluorosilicic acid. There's a lot of other names for it, but basically it's fluoride that is a byproduct of different mining industries, usually phosphate fertilizer mining here in Florida. So when they're digging up fluoride from, digging up these minerals from the earth, fluoride is a byproduct. It used to be released into the atmosphere and killed a lot of livestock, vegetation, and these companies were being sued because of all of the negative effects of the air pollution, the fluoride in their air pollution. So that is the exact product. Now, instead of it being released into the atmosphere, they use these wet scrubbers to scrub it directly from the smokestacks, and then they sell it to our local water suppliers, and that is what's being added to the water supply. It's fluorosilicic acid, so it's not a pharmaceutical grade sodium fluoride like the kind that they usually use in like toothpaste or different, you know, they have these like fluoride pills. It's not a pharmaceutical grade product. It is a byproduct of phosphate fertilizer mining. And you can call your water supplier and ask them where the fluoride comes from that they add to the water supply. And that's what they'll most likely tell you. It's well over 90% of the fluoride added to water supplies in the United States.
Okay, so this is really good information for those activist consumers. So people can actually call their water municipality and they can ask them what kind of fluoride, or should they say what is the source or the form? What would be the best question to find out what kind of fluoride is being dumped in your water?
I would ask them what the source is, where they get the fluoride that's being added to the water supply.
Now, I want to remind our listeners that you are listening right here on Progressive Radio Network to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, and we are talking with author Melissa Gallico, and she wrote a book called The Hidden Cause of Acne, How Toxic Water is Affecting Your Health and What You Can Do About It. And you also have a forward on your book, Melissa, from Stephen Harrod Berner, who I'm very, very familiar with his work because I'm on the Council of the American Herbalist Guild as well. What was Stephen's interest in writing a forward to your book?
Well, he read my book, and he knew at the time it was self-published. I just put it on Amazon because I started off just writing a free PDF guide that I put on the internet for anybody who had this weird fluoride condition that I had, and I heard from so many people. And a woman wrote to me with the words, "Your book saved my life," and I was just like, oh, I really need to turn this into a real book, not like a 20-page PDF, you know. So I wrote the book, and I just put it on Amazon as a self-published book. And again, I started hearing from so many people with these really just moving testimonials, people that had acne for 30 years and they saw the dermatologist and nothing fixed it. So Stephen Herbuner is one of the people that read the self-published version of the book. And like he said in the foreword, it just kind of stuck with him, and And he kept thinking about it, and he offered to write the foreword when I actually found a publisher to bring it to a wider audience. So that's how he ended up writing the foreword for the book.
That's wonderful, because he is really well known and respected. So
oh, yeah,
you
I was
can
so
find,
excited
you can
to have
find
him
Melissa's
do that.
Book, of course, anywhere. And she has a website, hiddencauseofacne.com. So isn't that amazing? So you figured this out because you were an FBI agent and highly trained in looking deeply into things. Just amazing. So tell me, Melissa, with your interest in health, are you going to go on to perhaps get higher degrees in healthcare at this point? What are your plans for your personal future?
So personally, I am all about ending fluoridation. I really feel like it's time. And I know it's been going on for so long, and people have this idea that, like, oh, we can't change it, it's never going to end. But everything ends sometime, and I think that now is the time to end fluoridation. Because when you look back historically, you know, it was even hard to share scientific studies, you know, back in the day when they were trying to end fluoridation, you know, in the 60s and the 70s. And we don't have that problem anymore. Everyone has access to these scientific articles showing the negative effects of fluoride. So I'm putting all of my energy into trying to end fluoridation. I just launched a production studio to create more books, more videos, and a podcast. It's called The Gallico Show, all about conversations about fluoridation.
Wow, how ambitious of you. And of course, you're right. There have been groups working on this for decades. In fact, I used one of the group's information, really the same as what you're sharing now, in order to stop my municipality from putting fluoride in the water and chlorine. I did both of those when my children were little. My son is now 43. My daughter is going to be 40, my youngest child. And so we're talking about, you know, 4.5 decades ago. It was already in the water supply. I found out what you're sharing in this book. And I actually did go to the library, medical libraries, print out the studies, right? No online, no web access, like you said. But the studies were still there about the negative effects. And I actually printed them out, went to my town council board meetings, and convinced those people they did not want fluoride, particularly that form of fluoride, dumped into the water supply. What is, and by the way, I was successful, just so you know, if any of you want to try that,
that
now.
Is so inspiring.
Yeah, and you can work with Melissa, because now she's putting it together in a beautiful way that I'm sure will be so much easier to share at, let's say, a municipality meeting.
Yeah, there's been a lot of success. People like you, usually it's young moms or just concerned citizens going to their city council meetings and educating their council members on, you know, the true story of fluoride, that it's a pollution story, that what we're adding to the water is not wise. It's not wise to take
well,
a chemical
from a smokestack. Well, I love that young
mom.
Of course, now I'm an old grandma,
yeah.
But nonetheless. But Melissa, what about, you know, people have sometimes seen children that get black teeth when they've been having fluoride in the water. What is that about?
So that's a condition called dental fluorosis, and I actually have dental fluorosis. It's not black, but it manifests in different ways. So when your children are exposed to too much fluoride while their teeth are forming, you can actually see it in the tooth enamel. Mine shows up as bright white spots, and that's the more common form of dental fluorosis. But when it's severe, it can be brown spots or black stains on the teeth. And this is just showing that the child had too much fluoride in the diet at that time. When I was a kid, the rate of dental fluorosis was like in the 20% or so. They do surveys, national surveys for this every 10 years. And then in 2004, it had doubled to over 40%. And then recently, I saw a study in the Journal of Dental Hygiene that looked at teenagers, 16, 17-year-olds, and they found the rate of dental fluorosis was over 60%. So that shows we're just being exposed to more and more fluoride, and that it's too much for our bodies to handle.
And it just does not seem to be scientifically supported in terms, it looks like it's just a business decision to help, as usual, the big giant industry turn something that is a waste product, which they don't want to deal with, into a profit source for the big giant corporation.
Yeah, I think that was a lot of it. And in the beginning, it was also a way for them to avoid litigation, because they were being sued by so many farmers, you know, for their livestock and their crops being destroyed, and for people that live nearby these plants, they were facing lawsuits. So these polluters actually funded researchers, entire research centers at universities, to come up with research that showed that fluoride wasn't bad for you. And not only wasn't it bad for you, but it's good for you. And so that science helped them, mitigate their vulnerability to lawsuits. So that was really the start of it. Then once it was instituted in federal government policy, you know, the federal government recommended fluoridation, and they built the entire dental establishment is really founded on fluoridation. If you look at the history of it, it's so hard for them to admit that they made a mistake. Like, I don't know what it will take to get them to change course on that and to admit that they were tricked basically by these corporate polluters. So that's another part. It's just government, you know, momentum and bureaucratic kind of egos involved. And then the other big corporate side of it is the toothpaste industry. They spend, you know, $90 million a year, I think was the statistic in my book, on advertising for Crest toothpaste alone, you know, saying, hey, it's a fluoridated toothpaste. It prevents cavity. It's ADA approved. So that's another corporate interest. And finally, the sugar industry has a role here as well, because they're always looking for ways to prevent cavities without reducing sugar consumption. And there have been studies that show they had a pretty major role in shaping the form of dental policy that our federal government has. So there's a lot of corporate interest keeping fluoridation afloat.
So you definitely are always looking at the studies, that's for sure. And, you know, there is conflicting evidence, though. I mean, there must be something that indicates that using fluoridated toothpaste is better in terms of cavity outcome.
Yeah, the research on fluoride is just such a mixed bag. You can look at the Cochrane Review. They're this British organization that reviews government health policy. And when they analyzed fluoridation, they saw that there really wasn't as much evidence as they thought. Because a lot of people will just say, oh, there's decades of evidence showing that fluoridation is safe and effective. But when you ask them, well, where is the actual evidence? They just keep saying, you know, there's decades of evidence that it's safe and effective. Or they'll use footnotes. But if you go into the footnotes and look at the sources, they're saying different things than they actually claim. Sometimes even the abstract say different things than what the studies are showing. So to really get at the heart of the science, you need to read the original, you know, the original journal articles and draw your conclusions from there, because the science on fluoride has been so distorted by all of these different special interest groups.
That is so true. You know, I function as an editorial review professional with many of the high-quality journals, such as Alternative Therapies in Health and Medicine. And when I'm reviewing an article, so often I'll see a reference, and the name of the reference sounds like it's supportive to what they're saying. But when you actually open the reference, even though the first sentence sounds like it's supportive, when you read it, the content, and as you said, even the abstract, says that that concept is not supported by the literature.
Exactly.
So you really have to dig down, which is very easy. Anyone now has full access to PubMed. Anyone can go to PubMed. Anyone can look up any study and read it, at least the abstract and sometimes the full content for themselves. It's not that difficult.
Yeah, and like you mentioned, public libraries are a great source if you want to read the full article. My alumni association gives me access to a lot of journal articles, so I did a lot of the research for the book through that. So it's just a different time now where anybody who has an interest in these studies can access them if they want to.
Well, you have a vast array of excellent studies, and I do want to point that out, Melissa, in your book, The Hidden Cause of Acne, How Toxic Water is Affecting Your Health and What You Can Do About It. I love this one that you refer to, saying that at the Medical College of Georgia, they found that the fluoride content of tea is very high also.
Yeah, so tea is really the one edible plant that accumulates fluoride naturally from the soil in very significant amounts. So usually, you know, food plants have some low amount of trace fluoride, but tea, it's very high. And in this study that you're mentioning from the Medical College of Georgia, they had some patients who had skeletal fluorosis, which is the early stages of fluoride being accumulated in the bone and the joints and it causing like arthritis-like symptoms. So they had patients that had skeletal fluorosis and they were excessive tea drinkers. They drank so much iced tea every day that they assumed that the skeletal fluorosis was caused by the tea. But when they tested the tea, it didn't have super high amounts of fluoride that they thought would, you know, contribute to skeletal fluorosis. So they formed a hypothesis that the tea contained more fluoride than they thought, but maybe it was bound up in the aluminum, because tea is also very high in aluminum, and that for some reason that they weren't able to measure it because of those aluminum bonds. So they dissolved the fluoride aluminum bonds, and then they measured for fluoride using a different testing method, and they found the tea actually contained three times as much fluoride as they originally thought with the traditional testing method. So I just used that study to show that even our like hard scientific tests, like that measure the fluoride content of foods, we might be missing something there. Like we didn't know that that tea contained so much more fluoride, and we wouldn't have figured out if those scientists hadn't developed that hypothesis and tested it.
Well, thank you for sharing that. We're going to go for a little break right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And by the way, we'd love to hear from you. So get in touch. You can email us or call us. Go to naturalnurse.com, look at contact. And we will be right back with more right here on Progressive Radio Network to talk with author Melissa Gallico about her book, The Hidden Cause of Acne, How Toxic Water is Affecting Your Health and What You Can Do About It.
On this edition of the Natural Medicine Chest, we'll discuss the ancient Chinese science and art of acupuncture.
Acupuncture is a 5,000-year-old medical procedure involving insertion and manipulation of needles into specific points on the body. It is often applied to relieve pain during surgery and for many other conditions.
Acupuncture needles have been found in China that are over 4,000 years old. The first needles were made of stones. Later, bronze, gold, or silver was used, and today they are usually made from steel. Acupuncture was developed around the theory of special meridian points on the body connected to the internal organs, and that vital energy, or qi, flows along these meridians. According to this theory, diseases are caused by interrupted energy flow, and the stimulation of these points restores normal energy circulation. There is some scientific evidence of the existence of the meridians as a separate circulatory system. Studies were done in the 1970s by a Dr. Kim from Korea, where he injected radioactive dyes into the traditional acupuncture points. He observed migration of the dyes along the exact predicted path of the meridians.
Okay. How acupuncture works remains uncertain, but both Western and Eastern scientific studies on rabbits have shown that the analgesic effects are not simply a matter of suggestion. After the discovery in 1975 of endorphins, natural pain inhibitors in the body, some neurophysiologists suggested that the needles may trigger the release of these substances. American and Chinese studies have confirmed that placing acupuncture needles in the brains of dogs raises the level of endorphins in the spinal fluid.
Acupuncture is used today in most hospitals in China and by many private practitioners in virtually every country in the world, including the United States. The primary use is for analgesia, although ulcers, hypertension, asthma, and other conditions have been documented to respond favorably to this treatment. Chinese surgeons prefer acupuncture to the use of drug-induced analgesia because they claim it does not disturb normal body physiology and therefore does not make the patient vulnerable to shock. Brain surgery is especially amenable to this form of analgesia when it is necessary to keep the patient awake during the operation.
Although some modifications in the practice of acupuncture have been made, such as sometimes using a small electric current on the needle instead of the traditional twirling, acupuncture remains intact as an ancient therapeutic technique that has been used successfully for at least 5,000 years. Perhaps you'd like to add this piece of knowledge to your natural medicine chest.
Joining me, Ellen Kamai, the natural nurse at naturalnurse.com. And you can join us many ways, such as in person. Here in Florida, we have a vast array of conferences coming up. For instance, the Florida Herbal Conference, which is on February 22nd. And that is a wonderful 3 days of herbal knowledge, and you get credit for it if you're a nurse or a registered dietitian, or a midwife, or an acupuncturist, or a massage therapist, or if you just want to come for your own knowledge, you are welcome. It is the Florida Herbal Conference. Definitely come. It sells out very early. We're then having the Annie Appleseed Foundation Conference, and that is in West Palm Beach, and it's the first weekend in March. I am presenting at both of those conferences, and you can find out more at naturalnurse.com calendar. We also have one-on-ones available where you come in to the office to find out what you can do for yourself and your family naturally for your own health and wellness. And we offer classes in herbal medicine so that you can become a registered herbalist, and you can get a certificate from the Natural Nurse School of Herbal Studies. All of these are available to groups as well as one-to-one. All you have to do is get in touch at naturalnurse.com, and we will review with you personally how you can work towards being a natural healthcare provider. And, you know, some people who have come, we found out one woman, in fact, had an esthetist license that she hadn't used in a long time. So she opened up a little storefront. She switched all the products to completely natural skincare. And she has a booming business as an organic esthetist. So the possibilities are endless. You can create your reality by finding out what you can do, either professionally or just for yourself and your family. So get in touch at naturalnurse.com. Just contact me and we can review what you can do. Today, we are so happy to have as our guest, author and expert, Melissa Gallico, a former military intelligence officer, Fulbright scholar, and intelligence specialist at the FBI. And she has looked deeply into the hidden cause of acne, and I would imagine she would be somebody who knows how to look into things deeply in the highest professional way. And her book, The Hidden Cause of Acne, How Toxic Water is Affecting Your Health and What You Can Do About It, is chock full of information that you need to know. So thank you so much for joining us today, Melissa.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Now, you know, what about skin doctors and dermatologists? I mean, people go there with acne more or less every day. People with adult acne, you know, teenagers, all kinds of people. They're just given cortisone. Has anyone ever questioned about their fluoride in their water?
No, this isn't something that the dermatologists have caught on to yet. And I like to talk about this study that the Johns Hopkins University put out a few years ago, where they looked at all of the research that dermatologists had done on acne in the second half of the 20th century. And they found that over 99% of the research did not even mention diet. So they're just really focused on the pills and the creams and the needles, and that's where their funding comes from. So it makes sense that that's what they're looking at. But since that time, that the paleo movement has kind of gotten people more interested in studying the dietary aspect of acne. And so there are a few studies about the paleo diet And there's one that came out called the Acne Vulgaris, A Disease of Western Civilization. So that was Dr. Lauren Cordain and a few other paleo researchers studying these groups around the world that never experience acne. And they attribute it to their diet. So it's kind of a new thing that dermatologists are looking at. Fluoride is not on the radar at this point. I'm always trying to get them interested in it, you know, sending them my book. But I think it's just such a foreign idea that it has not caught on yet.
Well, that's true. And the thing is that so many things in natural medicine not only don't get caught on, even though the evidence is there, they are actively worked against, probably mostly by the pharmaceutical industry, because that's who has a lot to lose. Because if dermatologists had the right information and helped people get rid of their skin condition, they wouldn't lose anything. In fact, they'll get more clients. But there will be less drugs sold.
Exactly. Yeah, there actually was an allergist back in the 60s, George Wolbot, who studied fluoride and skin reactions after he saw a lot of his patients were sensitive to fluoride. And he ended up getting really into fluoridation research. He wrote a book about it called Struggle with Titans, because he came up with all of this research, and some of it was, you know, showing acne. Other side effects were like gastrointestinal or headaches. So people reacted to fluoride in different ways, and he documented it. He did double-blind, placebo-controlled studies, and he could not get his research to be taken seriously. So that's why he called his book Struggle with Titans, because he just, you know, the science was there, but there wasn't interest in it because, like you said, it cuts down on profits from pharmaceutical companies. And also, you know, it doesn't look good for the dental establishment if it turns out that fluoride isn't a great thing after all.
Yes, absolutely. So that's, you know, that's what your life's work is, to bring this consciousness to people. Now, what about if someone focuses on organic food? Does organic food contain fluoride?
It's a really good step, because fluoride is used as a pesticide. A lot of people don't know that, but on certain crops, especially in California, they'll use fluoride to kill certain pests. And the biggest crops are grape crops. So grape juice, raisins, certain wines from California can be very high in fluoride, so you definitely want to buy them organic. But you also have to keep in mind the water issue. So if you're buying grape juice that is organic, it might still contain fluoride if it was made with fluoridated water. So that's just something to look out for. Just because it says organic doesn't mean it's low in fluoride, but your chances are better. You know, as long as it isn't made with fluoridated water, it will most likely be low in fluoride.
But how would you ever know? I mean, I'll give you an example. Organic brown rice, which many people think is a healthy thing to eat, when it was tested for arsenic, it was found to be so high that it's higher than plain white rice.
Yeah, I think it's because the pesticide, the fluoride-based pesticide, is not allowed on organic crops. So it definitely helps to buy organic, but I guess, like you said, you can't ever really know for sure unless you're testing all of your food, which would be complicated. But it is a good idea to buy organic when you can, especially for grape products. Another one is poultry. So when chickens consume fluoride, like if their feed is sprayed with fluoride-based pesticides and then they eat that feed, it accumulates in their bones, just like it does with humans. And then if you're making chicken soup out of those poultry products, or a lot of mechanically deboned meat like ground chicken or chicken nuggets will be very high in fluoride because it has little shards of bone in it. So you definitely want to buy organic for those as well, for any poultry products.
Okay, but you didn't really say why organic would be less, because, you know, they're not monitoring, let's say, that the water has to be tested even if it's raised in an organic facility.
Right. So the water is kind of the variable, because it's not considered like part of the organic labeling process. But if you buy organic poultry, the feed is not allowed to have fluoride sprayed on the feed. And that is what
biggest
source of fluoride in their diet is feed. The federal limit for fluoride on poultry feed is 113 parts per million. Like for water, it's 7 parts per million. So 113 parts per million is just ridiculously high. And these birds that are eating this feed sprayed with fluoride-based pesticides end up, like I said, accumulating in their bones. So some of my worst breakouts were from poultry products.
Now, this is interesting and news to me. You can always learn more. Like I said, I've been studying this issue literally since 1970, right. That's when I became familiar with this issue. But I never heard that. So that's really, really interesting. So why would chicken feed be sprayed with fluoride, Melissa?
To keep bugs out. I think they probably just have silos full of poultry feed and they need some way to protect them. So fluoride-based pesticides are really good at killing things. And that's probably why they're so high in fluoride.
Maybe they're good at killing us too. So that's pretty amazing. So are these fluoride-based pesticides used in other ways besides spraying it on feed, such as on crops?
Yeah, they're allowed to be used on a lot of different crops. But I did a lot of research into this. Like, if you go to the California Department of Pesticide Regulations website, they actually show, they have a database that shows what pesticides are used and where, and it breaks it down by county. So for the most part, fluoride-based pesticides, cryolite is the leading one. It's mostly just used on grape crops in a certain area of California. So San Joaquin Valley, that's where they grow half the world's raisin supply, and that happens to be where they use cryolite the most. It is allowed to be used on other things, but I haven't run into it in my experience, and I buy organic, but when I eat at a restaurant or something, you know, usually the vegetables aren't organic, and I don't have reactions from those kinds of foods. So I think as long as you're looking out for those grape products from San Joaquin Valley, you're probably okay and without, you know, worrying too much about exposure to cryolite. The other one is a fumigant, sulfuryl fluoride. It's the same one that they use when they, like, exterminate your house for termites. It's a very similar product, very deadly, and they'll spray entire warehouses of food with sulfuryl fluoride. In Europe, they have to remove the food from the warehouse before they spray it, but we don't have that regulation here, so there's really no way to know for sure if your food was sprayed, you know, was in a warehouse when they were spraying with sulfuryl fluoride. So it's not really one that we can control for. So I just tell people to try to do the best they can with organic, you know, buying organic food. If you're tight on your budget, just, you know, definitely poultry products and grape products. But, you know, all we can do is all we can do.
Well, that's right. Yeah, you have to take first steps. Now, so you did this. You tried, because of your own skin, and you were a young woman, you don't like having acne breakouts. And so that's what you said, why is this? Because you noticed as you went from region to region, it differed. And then you created a process of, you know, elimination. And then you did a lot of things, I imagine, like actual steps to get fluoride out of your life as much as possible. And we're going to take a little break right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And when we come back, let's look at some of the steps that you outline in your book, The Hidden Cause of Acne, that people can take to also walk down the path of having a much, much better skin with less acne and less fluoride in your body in general. So we will be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
This is PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Hi, this is John Lobel. You can hear my show Visionaries at 10 a.m. on Mondays on PRN. And guess what? PRN now has its own app. So you've always been able to listen to our shows by going to your web browser and putting in prn.fm. And then you can listen to the current show that's on air. But you can now download onto your smartphone, Android and iPhone, our PRN browser. Search for it in your app store, and you can listen live to whatever's on at the moment. So download now our PRN.fm app.
Hi, I'm David Crowe, host of The Infectious Myth, Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern Time here on PRN.FM. I love science the way it should be practiced, but a lot of modern science is corrupted by financial interests and serves a master other than the public good. Myths continue to be constructed around viruses, vaccines, forensics, and pharmaceutical drugs. People are dying and ending up in jail because of them. Listen to me as I deconstruct the myths that those who call themselves scientists weave, or when I wander into social and political topics. If you're new to the show, check out our past episodes at infectiousmyth.podbean.com.
Join the movement at PRN.FM, your best source for progressive programming.
Welcome back. Thank you so much for joining me. This is Ellen Kamai, the Natural Nurse. I'd love to hear from you. Go to naturalnurse.com, go to calendar to see our classes and workshops that are on ground as well as online, and also get in touch personally if you'd like to have a personal consult or if you'd like to upgrade your education level in natural medicine so that you become a registered herbalist or get an herbal certification or learn to incorporate some kind of aspect of natural health into your career. And boy, do we have a lot of people doing that because, you know, maybe you're not completely happy with what you're doing. Maybe you want to add another income source, but you wanted to include your interest in natural. And I know you have an interest in natural or you wouldn't be listening to us right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. So get in touch at naturalnurse.com. Today, we are talking to author Melissa Gallico. We are talking about her book, The Hidden Cause of Acne, How Toxic Water is Affecting Your Health and What You Can Do About It. And her website is hiddencauseofacne.com. So, Melissa, we left off saying, you know, you did all this research, you somehow came to the concept, it's pretty amazing, that the fluoride levels that you were ingesting in some areas in the United States were linked to your skin breakout, and then you went on a path to reduce that level. How do you do that?
So for me, it was a lot of trial and error because I had to figure this out for myself. What were the different sources of fluoride in my diet? But for people that have read the book, I hope it's a lot easier because I lay it all out. I have a cheat sheet. When you sign up to the newsletter, it sends you a cheat sheet on the most common hidden sources of fluoride.
Okay, wait a minute. So how do people sign up for the newsletter?
At hiddencauseofacne.com, you'll see in the footer, or there's a few different ways where you can sign up for the newsletter there, and it automatically sends you the cheat sheet.
Okay, sounds good.
Yeah, so I tell people the easiest place to start is with toothpaste and water. Sometimes if you just switch to a non-fluoridated toothpaste, that's enough to clear up your skin. It's a condition called perioral dermatitis. And it's very well documented. Some people have this topical reaction to fluoridated toothpaste, and they don't know it. A lot of times the dermatologist won't tell you. They're not aware of it, or it's just not commonly known, but it is a common condition. So switching to a non-fluoridated toothpaste and then reducing, figuring out if your water is fluoridated. We talked earlier about calling your local water supplier. And if so, just switch, even temporarily, for a few weeks to a source of water that's low in fluoride. You can either filter it, or you could buy bottled water, you know, temporarily to kind of do a test and see how your skin responds. Those are the two places to start. And then if you see a big change from that, then you can get into the more of the details about, you know, switching your poultry, making sure that's all organic, any grape products. Changing, if you're drinking tea every day, you definitely want to switch to something that is low in fluoride. So maybe using an herbal tea instead. And then there's a few other sources like pharmaceuticals. A lot of times will be made with fluoride in them. So maybe there's a certain pharmaceutical you're taking that is fluoride based. A lot of them are, a lot of the common ones. So switching, you know, talking to your doctor to change That might be the source of your fluoride in your experience. Or there's also a lot of chemical products that we use on a daily basis that are made with fluoride. So those could be rooted out as well.
Now, I just want to go back to tea for a moment, because it is interesting to note that when we use the word tea, not everybody knows this, what you really mean is anything made from Camellia sinensis. That's the plant. And that includes black tea, English tea, and green tea and white tea. Those are all what we call tea, versus what you're discussing and is commonly called, Melissa, herb tea. Actually, that's called an herb to send. It's not really called a tea, although certainly it is called a tea, you know, universally, although incorrectly. And that would be some other plant other than the tea plant, which is Camellia sinensis.
Yes, that's exactly right. So anything other than the tea plant, the Camellia sinensis plant, will be low in fluoride. So you can have peppermint leaf or raspberry leaf tea, or there's so many different options. But if you go with traditional black tea, green tea and white tea has less fluoride than the black tea, but it still uptakes fluoride from the soil.
That's a great. Information. Now, you have a lot in your book, Melissa, about iodine. What is the iodine connection to acne?
So I became interested in iodine because I was writing about my experience with fluoride and acne online, and someone kind of gave me a tip to look into iodine because it displaces fluoride from your body. And they said, you know, you can do tests that show this. You take an iodine supplement, they measure the fluoride in the urine over the next 24 hours, and you could see your body is, expelling fluoride from the iodine supplement. So I started looking into it, and I was just really fascinated by it, and I ended up writing the entire last chapter of the book is about iodine.
It looks like another book, to tell you the truth. You can expand on this one.
Yeah, exactly. It really took on a life of its own just looking into iodine. It's such a fascinating topic, and it's tricky. It's not something that I advise people to go out and just start consuming all this iodine in their diet. It can be difficult because you're detoxifying fluoride, and so many of us have way too much fluoride in their system. So I started having a lot of negative reactions to the iodine, and it took me a long time to figure out how to safely incorporate it in my nutritional plan without experiencing these negative reactions to it. So that's what the last chapter of the book is about.
So overall, through your self-investigation and changing your own dietary habits and other habits, you were able to bring down that skin breakout that you had had.
Yeah, I was able to get rid of my acne completely. I feel like now I can control it like the dial on a radio. You know, if I want to be like experiment with something, sometimes I'll be like, well, I don't know if this drink is made with fluoridated water. Let me just try it, you know, and if I have a reaction, then I know like, oh, it was made, you know, and then I just stop drinking that and then I don't get breakouts. So right now I've had clear skin for years because I know exactly what causes my acne.
And in general, that might be true for others, or there could be other triggers.
Yeah, I've heard from so many people. You can see a lot of different before and after pictures on my website at hiddencauseofacne.com. There's a section for before and afters and testimonials from people. So it's a very common condition. It's just not commonly known about yet.
Well, it certainly is, and I think that whole water fluoridation is just a debacle, you know, like so many things that are only based on increasing profits for the wealthy and have nothing to do with maintaining people's health and wellness. And, you know, I'm sure when you first found that out, that was rather shocking.
Oh, totally shocking. And I think when people realize it, it kind of changes the way they look at everything, because you're like, whoa, you know, if I could have been wrong about that for so long, what else am I wrong about? So it can really change your perspective on a lot of different health issues in general, because it really kind of just rocks your world, like realizing that fluoride is not what you thought it was all these years. I always drank fluoridated water, and I got the fluoride treatments at the dentist, and I never questioned it. I never even heard about the controversy over fluoridation until this last time when I was living in Scotland, and it's very over 97% of the Scottish public do not agree with fluoridation. They've never fluoridated there on a national level. I think there might be like one or two towns that practice it, but that's really the first time I even knew that there was a controversy over it.
Right. Well, so many of these things are hidden, and they're about to try to, you know, this is just a heads up for our savvy audience, because there is a movement, and it's called NewsGuard, NewsGuard. And NewsGuard is going to be evaluating all the information on websites and studies and giving it a rating in terms of if it's fake news or if it's verified. The problem is anything like we're talking about is going to be noted as not real news because it doesn't go along with pre-prescribed big government and big business norms.
Yeah, that's a shame. It's really hard to evaluate your own culture. I think that's why when I traveled abroad, it allowed me to see things that I normally wouldn't have seen if I was just staying here in the States. So, you know, hopefully 10, 20 years from now, people will look back and think like, wow, how did they all get it so wrong? But I think and on an individual level, people recognize when they're hearing the truth. And I think the truth of what we're saying will resonate with people. And I'm hoping that's what helps it eventually, you know, come to an end.
Absolutely. And I'm just shouting that out for yourself and others. Look into NewsGuard because it's going to be on a phone and computer and internet near you, where it will be saying, like, if we have a discussion like this, which often takes place, in fact, on Progressive Radio Network, where you're hearing things that might seem like new information. For me, it's not new. As I said, it's over 50 years old, but nonetheless, bringing it to your attention, like Melissa does in the book, The Hidden Cause of Acne, will be once again interfered with by this NewsGuard rating. So look into it. Melissa, thank you so much for joining us today with your wonderful book, The Hidden Cause of Acne.
Thank you, Ellen. It was such a pleasure speaking with you.
And thank you, listeners, for joining us once again on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Until next time, this is Ellen Kamai, The Natural Nurse. And as always, we are wishing you the best. Stay healthy.